Translation of Prabhupada Bhāsya Prabhupāda Bhāsya Prabhupāda Ki Jai. Although no one in the material world is equal to or greater than Lord Shiva, and although his unimpeachable character is followed by great souls to dismantle the mass of nations, he nevertheless remains as if a devil to give salvation to all devotees of the Lord. Please repeat after me. Although no one in the material world is equal to or greater than Lord Shiva, and although his unimpeachable character is followed by great souls to dismantle the mass of nations, he nevertheless remains as if a devil to give salvation to all devotees of the Lord. Short purport. Lord Shiva's uncivilized, devilish characteristics are never abominable because he teaches the sincere devotees of the Lord how to practice detachment from material enjoyment. He is called Mahadev, or the greatest of all demigods, and no one is equal to or greater than him in the material world. He is almost equal with Lord Vishnu. Although he is always associated with Maya, Durga, he is above the reactionary stage of the three modes of material nature. And although he is in charge of devilish characters in the mode of ignorance, he is not affected by such association. Om Ajnati Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Uttapada Kamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavamsya Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tamsajivam Sadhavaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhansvitamsya. Hey Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. How many of you have stayed at the Bhakti Center? Yeah. So you must have then noticed the tune of this Mangalacharan. It's from our dear Radhakanta Prabhu. We were very fortunate that for about 20 odd years we had his association every Wednesday at the Radha Govinda Sangha. And then he's abandoned us, but we're hoping he will come back. So Radhakanta Prabhu is my, Vartma Pradarshak Guru. Everything that I know, I came to ISKCON because of him. So I also seek his blessings. Hare Krishna. I know he does not like to be glorified, so I apologize in advance. I'm sure I'll be told off later, Hare Krishna. So just the translation once again. Although no one in the material world is equal to or greater than Lord Shiva, and although his unimpeachable character is followed by great souls to dismantle the mass of nations, he nevertheless remains as if a devil to give salvation to all devotees of the Lord. So just before we get into today's verse, just give some context. So after hearing about... Chapter 13 was about what? Forgotten, everybody? No, 14 is pregnancy of Diti. Chapter 13? Varaha, appearance of Varahadev. Yes, see, so quickly we forget, right? Because we're doing verse by verse, obviously it's a long time since we did the chapter 13. So my Guru Maharaj once said that it's nice, of course, to do this verse by verse, because devotees like myself get a chance to practice, to give class and all that. But what he used to do was he used to do sometimes sessions where he would do a whole chapter. So we would go through like 2 or 3 months of classes where he would do a whole chapter at a time so that we get an overview of the chapters rather than getting lost in the jungle. Because Bhagavatam is very, very deep and vast, of course, so it's quite easy to get lost. Anyways, yeah, so chapter 13 was appearance of Varahadev. After hearing the story of a pastime of Varahadev from Maitra Rishi, Vidura is still eager to hear more. So he's then in the beginning of the chapter 14, which is entitled Pregnancy of Diti in the Evening. Vidura is requesting Maitra Muni to speak more. And specifically, he's asking to speak about the interaction between the Supreme Personality of Godhead and Hiranyaksha. So now before he responds, Maitra Rishi glorifies the question. So he says this, your inquiries are glorious because these topics of the Lord, they are liberating for everyone. So in this connection, it reminded me of and the episode in the beginning of the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, which we know is the pastime of Lord Krishna and Vrindavan, Mathura, etc. Very, very sweet, very sweet canto. Right in the beginning of that canto, Parikshit Maharaj asks questions to Shukadev Goswami. And after a series of questions about Krishna's pastimes, and he wanted to know more. So at that time also, Shukadeva Goswami similarly glorifies the questions from Parikshit Maharaj, and he speaks a particular sweet verse which goes, Vasudeva katha prashna purushams trin punati hi vakta ram prachakam shotrims tat pada shalilam yatha. Beautiful verse. So here we start the translation with the last line, tat pada shalilam. What is salilam first? Water, river, right? And what is padas? So what is padas salilam? Say again. Yeah, so what emanated from the feet? Which water emanated from the toes? The Ganges, right? So it says here, that padas salilam yatha. So then it says, just as the water from the river Ganges, which emanates from the toes of the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, purifies the three worlds, the upper world, upper planets, the middle planets, and the lower world. Similarly, Vasudeva Katha Prashna. This is very easy to understand. Vasudev, Krishna, Katha, his pastimes, Prashna, means questions. So questions about the pastimes of Lord Krishna. Purushams, people, Trim Punati, so three types of people, Punatihi, it actually purifies these three types of people. Which are three types? Vaktaram. Vaktaram is the speaker. The speaker's turn comes first. Vaktaram, then Prachakam. Prachakam is one prashna. Prachakam is one who asks the questions. And Shrotrims. So these three types of people are purified by wonderful questions we ask. So questions and answers at the end of the at every class we have is very purifying for the speaker as well as the one who asked the question and everybody else who's listening. So beautiful verse, this it reminded me of. So after glorifying the questions, then Maitreya Rishi begins the response by describing how Diti approaches Kashyap Muni and at the wrong time. While Kashyap Muni was in meditation in the evening doing his prayers, that's when she approaches him for union because for two reasons. One, it's explained that she was lusty, and secondly, she was eager to have progeny because all her other sisters had children, and she didn't. There were 13 of them married to Kashyap Muni, and all of them had progeny, but she didn't, so that was the reason. So then Kashyap Muni is trying to explain to this particular set of verses 22 to 29. We're on 27 today. So these verses, they are speaking about Kashyap Muni's attempt, his meek attempt to sort of postpone the union. And he gives so many reasons to Diti why it is not the right time for union. He talks about the fact that right now it's very dangerous because Lord Shiva and his associates, which are ghosts and Pisachas, are roaming around at this time of the evening. And if we do this act at this time, then we may be cursed by Lord Shiva. So we should not do this. So he's explaining this verse, and in a way he's glorifying Lord Shiva. So this particular verse we recited today is Lord Shiva's glorification. Shiva Tattva is quite difficult to understand, isn't it? It is generally said that there are three tattvas which are difficult to understand. So one is Shiva Tattva. What's the other one? Guru Tattva. And the Shakti Tattva, maybe also. But the main is? Every Tattva, yeah. So actually, many, many different things. But three main, what I've heard, was Shiva Tattva, Guru Tattva, and Jiva Tattva. So all devotees here, of course, because we are lesson number one when we come to ISKCON is that I am not this body. But the mass population outside, they probably don't even think about those things. So for them, it's a very difficult thing to understand that I'm not this body. You know, it's a simple thing like that. So Shiva Tattva, difficult because Shiva, as we heard in this purport, is almost close to Lord Vishnu. So, you know, he's almost Vishnu, but yet not Vishnu. He's not in the category of Jivas. And he's not in the category of Vishnu Tattva. So he's in between. He's got his own special category. And he's got different layers. There is Sadashiva. Then there is Shankara. Then there's Rudras. There's so many different aspects. So that's why Shiva Tattva is quite difficult. Guru Tattva is difficult to understand because in reality, people understand Guru, yes, they know somebody they have to respect. But actual Tattva of Guru, that Guru is almost to be respected as much as Lord Krishna. Shakshat Darit Venasamastha Sastre. So we all those things are quite difficult for people to complete. He's a Jiva, but he's an empowered Jiva. He's the manifestation of God's mercy. So these are the things that are difficult to understand for normal people. And like Jiva Tattva, we said, Jiva Tattva, difficult for people to understand that I'm not this body. So in the translation and the purports, we'll just highlight, it highlights Lord Shiva's unique position. And Prabhupada says, it says that no one is equal to or greater than him in the material world. And the purport says he's known as Mahadev. And his power surpasses all demigods except Vishnu. So you see, he's talking about all demigods except Vishnu because we're talking about Vishnu in the material world. Vishnu was in charge of the mortal goodness. Except for that Vishnu, Lord Shiva is above even Lord Brahma. His character is described as unimpeachable, so spotless character. And that the sages also, they follow the example for his example of detachment, austerity, simplicity. Lord Shiva, it was explained in yesterday's verse, he is the husband of Durga, who is in charge of the material world. Yet he lives simply. He doesn't even have a house, not even a hut. He lives in a crematorium or in places like that. So simplicity. So the sages, they follow his examples like this. His very lifestyle, it dismantles the greatest misconception, the greatest illusion that material life is for happiness. Lord Shiva himself, just by his lifestyle, by his character, he's explaining to us, he's trying to show to us that, look, nothing in the material world is enjoyable. We must try and live a life of detachment once we're given the human birth. This world is dukhalayam ashashvatam, so there is no happiness to be gained here. One must focus, do what Lord Shiva does, 24 hours, meditate on Lord Krishna. Some say he meditates on Lord Shankara. Some say he meditates on Lord Rama. Whichever, he's a supreme personality of Godhead. He's always meditating. So by his example, meditate on the Supreme Lord and at the same time try and live a simple life. He's not a jiva tattva. He's a special category of his own. And it is in the Brahma Samhita, it is described, Jai Jai Shishi Radha Gokula Nand Ki Jai Shishi Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai Shishi Gonita Ki Jai Jagat Guru Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Hare Krishna. So it in Brahma Samhita, it's explained, his character is explained, the comparison is made with milk and yogurt. So it's a very famous verse. Shall we all recite together? Shiram yatha dadivikara vishesha yogat sanjayate nahitata prithag asti heto yashambhutam apitatha samupaiti karyat govindam adipurusham tamaham bhajami. So Prabhupada translates that verse, says, just as milk is transformed into curd by the action of acids, but yet the effect, curd, is neither same as or different from its cause, viz. Milk. So I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, of whom the state of Shambhu is a transformation for the performance of the work of destruction. So he is transformed. So Lord Shiva is actually the Lord himself in a different aspect. So he is, the Lord transforms himself into Lord Shiva for the action that needs to be done, which the Lord doesn't want to do himself. He is in charge of the Lord of ignorance, so for the mode of ignorance. Vishnu is also, because Lord himself does not come in contact with Maya, with material nature directly. He cannot. He doesn't want to. Because his tattva is Vishnu tattva, cannot be mixed with the jiva tattva like that. So he transforms himself into Lord Vishnu, and it is explained that in the beginning of creation, when Lord Vishnu glances over Mahatattva, that glance is actually Shiva, and that the jivas enter into the material world through that glance. So that is Lord Shiva. So he associates with Maya. He looks after the fallen conditioned souls, the ghosts and pisachas and the fallen souls. He looks after them. So he takes charge of them to elevate them gradually so they can also be at one point delivered. But yet, he is not touched. He is in charge of the tamogun, of the mode of ignorance, yet he is not touched by tamogun at all. It's the examples, of course, can be a lotus flower in a dirty pond. The pond may be filthy, but the lotus flower itself remains pure. It doesn't get touched. Any other examples that Prabhupada gives? Anybody? Yes? Yes. Sun, exactly. Sun evaporates water even from the filthiest place, but it does not get contaminated itself. The other example you can think of is maybe a surgeon or doctor working in a ward in a hospital which is full of disease, but most of the time he remains not infected. So why is Lord Shiva, he's mentioned as he appears like devilish? Pishachacharyam, the ghost-like behavior. So why is that? He lives in the crematorium. It is explained, I think, in the previous verse or the verse, next verse, I'm not sure where it was, that he covers his body with ashes. And his hair is sort of covered with the dust from the burning crematorium. His associates are ghostly beings. His appearance is completely unconventional. But these are all teaching tools. It's not he does all this to give us all some kind of a lesson. So the ashes on his body, that is supposed to remind us of the body's destiny. All of us are going to be ending up as ashes eventually. So that is a reminder, constant reminder that this life is very, very short and very temporary, and our destination is the ashes. The crematorium similarly reminds us the fact that he lives in a crematorium. We think of Lord Shiva, we think of the fact that he lives in a crematorium. Again, it reminds of us of the impermanence of this human life. And his lifestyle, his lifestyle himself itself is a personification of renunciation, just to teach us all. He's there, the Lord Shiva is there to give shelter to the fallen souls, as we discuss. Ghost spirits, beings of lower modes approach him. He does not reject them, but he elevates them. This is the compassion, beyond all social norms. Most people would turn away from these kind of creatures, right? If we're walking down the street and a dirty beggar comes near us, we try and move away from him, don't we? And this also reminds me of a pastime. I think maybe he was in France, I'm not sure, when Prabhupada was giving a class. And this really sort of filthy, I don't know what he was. He was like a drunkard outside. He walked in, and everybody started to push him away because he was dirty, filthy, and he was coming into the temple. And Prabhupada said, let him come and sit like that. So this is the compassion Prabhupada was showing, that doesn't matter what the personal may be externally, but somehow Krishna sort of made him come into the temple. So let him sit, doesn't matter. And I forget the following, whether there was this particular episode or whether somewhere else where Prabhupada said eventually this person became a devotee. But yeah, so he doesn't reject. So we should not go by the externals and go deeper. Say again. It's another story, right? Yeah. There's two stories. In my old age, I get confused with these stories. So despite his unconventional appearance and activities, he is considered to be the greatest Vaishnava. What is the verse in the Bhagavatam? He talks about this. Yeah. How does it start? Nimnaganam. Nimnaganam yatha ganga, devanam achyuto yatha, vaishnavanam yatha shambhu, purananam idam tatha. So actually this verse is glorifying the Bhagavatam. But in the process, it's also glorifying Lord Shiva as a topmost Vaishnava and Lord Achyuta, Lord Krishna, as a topmost worshipable deity. So yes, he is the topmost Vaishnava. He's also mentioned as one of the 12 Mahajans. Swayambhu Nada Shambhu Kumara Kapila Manu Pralada Janaka Vishma Bali Vayasaki Vayam. These are the 12 Mahajans. Swayambhu is who? Lord Brahma. Narada, of course, Narada. Shambhu, Lord Shiva, one of the Mahajans. Shambhu, Kumara, four Kumaras, Kapila, Lord Kapila, son of Devahuti, Prahlad, no, before that was Janaka. Janaka, Bhishma Dev, Prahlad Maharaj, and then Vyashaki. Vyashaki is who? Shukdev Goswami. And Vayam, who is Vayam? Huh? Yamraj himself, because he's speaking the verse. He's saying we, in like a royal we. Yeah. So that's the 12 Mahajans. So he is a Mahajan. Lord Shiva's nature is also described as Ashutosh. Ashutosh, meaning he's very quickly satisfied. Ashu means quick. Quickly, Ashu. And Tosh comes from the word Santosh, right? Ashutosh. There's a verse in the Bhagavad Gita, first canto, second chapter, where it talks about Sam Siddhir, Hari Toshanam. Toshanam, it's the same word there, Tosh, Ashutosh. So many pastimes of Lord Shiva being easily pleased. He gives boons very, very, very generously. And sometimes it does also backfire on him. So many, many stories that we can speak about Lord Shiva and his boons. Anybody can think of a pastime, many, many pastimes where Lord Shiva gives boons, where it backfires. Vrikashur is the most famous one. Vrikashur wanted to get a boon so that whoever's head he puts his hand on will burst into 1,000 pieces. And eventually, when he got the boon, he wanted to test it out on Lord Shiva. And then, of course, the pastime goes on, and Lord Vishnu, in a Vamana form, tricks him to put the hand on his own head. Any other pastimes? Huh? Ravana, exactly. There you go. Biggest one. Ravana got the boon, and then he became a terror. And then? Banasura, yes. Banasura. That story is amazing. So Banasura, he was the grandson of Bali Maharaj, right? Yes, grandson of Bali Maharaj. And he was like the ruler of a kingdom called Shonitpur. And he had 1,000 arms, 1,000 hands. And he was a staunch devotee of Lord Shiva. So he pleased Lord Shiva once by playing musical instruments with 1,000 hands. So imagine, like just now we were playing the mridanga with 2 hands, right? If we had 1,000 hands, we could play 500 mridangas at the same time, simultaneously, and maybe play different beats on each one. Yeah, or play 500 of those accordion things, right, or whatever. So it's like this. He pleased Lord Shiva so much with his performance that Lord Shiva asked him for a boon. And the boon he asked for is, please, whatever happens, always protect my city. He wanted protection from Shonitpur. So he gets that boon from Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva says, Tathastu. And then that pastime goes into the point where he had a very beautiful daughter whose name was Usha. Usha was very, very pretty. And Banasura was very protective about Usha. And what he did in a palace, there would be always like the outer sanctum and there would be inner sanctum. And in this inner sanctum, it's usually only for Matajis, ladies who stay there, and very protected. So Usha was kept there. Her father insisted that you stay there, don't come out from there. She would stay in that inner sanctum. That sanctum is not visited by any men. Her servants are all female, of course, and there's no man allowed to go anywhere near that in a sanctum. This is how protected she was. So one time Usha was wondering, look, I am like this, I'm not even meeting anybody outside. Even if she goes outside for some sort of ritual, then she will be surrounded by gods who are all female. So she says, how am I ever going to meet my future husband? And then in a dream, it's explained that Lord Durga comes in a dream and says to her that you will have a dream of a person who is going to be your husband, and that way you will meet him in your dream. So then in her dream, she started to get dreams of this particular personality, a really, really handsome personality, very powerful personality, and regularly that personality came into her dream. And this continued for quite a while. Then one time, in an afternoon, they were all sort of serving together, her maids were serving her, and she was lying down, and she sort of dozed off. And in her sort of afternoon nap, she also got that dream. And that personality in that dream was about to leave. So she's saying, oh, please don't go. I love you. Stay with me. And she spoke aloud. So all the associates of her started to laugh, and they started to tease her and say, what was this? So she got really bashful. And then one of her closest associates, her name was Chitralekha. So she then convinced her to reveal to her what she was dreaming about. So she then revealed to her that this is what happened. I dreamt about this personality who was going to be my husband, but I don't know who he is. So Chitralekha, so see, in the Vedic times, the names are also wonderful. The names are like, so Chitralekha, she was also a superb artist, and she was also a mystic. So she started to draw pictures of all the famous princes around. And each time she said, no. And then when she drew the picture of Aniruddha, the grandson of Krishna. Grandson of Krishna. That when she saw that picture, she went bashful, she went shy. So now this is the one you were seeing in your dream. So with her mystic powers, Chitralekha actually transported Aniruddha into the chambers of Usha without anybody knowing. So Aniruddha was transferred here, and Aniruddha and Usha fell in love, and they spent days and days together like this in this inner sanctum. Now, at one point, although only few people knew, few of her associates knew that she was there, but the other people started to know because there were some signs there. It is said in there, there were some symptoms there which showed the presence of a male. I don't know what it was, whether it was a shaving brush or whatever he left there. I don't know. But somehow they figured. And these maid servants got really frightened because they look, if ever Banasura finds out that there's a man here, he is going to kill us. So it's better that we go and tell him. Otherwise, we'll be in trouble. So they go and tell Banasura that, look, we think there's a male. There's a male in the room of Usha. So Banasura then comes there and sees them sitting on a bed playing chess or something, right? And he starts, there's a big fight. And Aniruddha, of course, grandson of Krishna, was very powerful. So there's a huge fight between the two of them. But in the end, with his 1,000 arms and everything, with ropes and everything, he ties him down and he is then imprisoned. Krishna then hears, I think it's Narad Muni tells him that Aniruddha is now captured by Banasura. So Krishna then comes to release him. There's a big fight. Krishna and Balaram with the armies are there. And there's a big fight between the armies. Banasura himself is fighting against Krishna. Krishna, of course, is a lot more powerful. He starts chopping off his hands, 1,000 hands. He starts chopping them off one by one. And then Banasura realizes he's going to lose. He then invokes the mercy of Shiva. Now, Lord Shiva, he knows who Lord Krishna is. Yet, he cannot help but support the person who's given his boon. He has to, you know, fulfill his boon. So Lord Shiva then enters into the fight. And there's a big fight. It's described in great detail. A huge fight between Lord Shiva and Lord Krishna. Of course, Lord Krishna prevails in the end. And Lord Shiva then begs his pardon. And also Banasura. So Lord Shiva says, please pardon him. He's one of my devotees and I've given him a boon. So please pardon him. So Lord Krishna says, okay, I will pardon him. But to cut his arrogance, I will chop off all of his hands except four. So left him with four hands. And then in the end, Banasura also submitted. And Aniruddha and Usha got married, and this was the happy ending of the story. So this is Lord Shiva, wonderful, wonderful. You can speak so much about Lord Shiva. It's an amazing character. But I'll just open it up for questions. If you have questions, Radhakanta Prabhu is here to answer. If you have any corrections, please let me know. Any realizations, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, thank you for the class. I just had a small doubt, like a doubt about. So you know, you said Chitralekha. Her name is Chitralekha, and it means to draw.
Yeah.
Right. So it's funny how in the Bhagavatam there's so many characters like this. I can't think of them so much, but sometimes. The rashtra means...
Dhritarashtra, holding on to a rashtra, holding on to the kingdom.
Rashtra, yes. So, and I don't know, maybe Duryodhana also means...
Duryodhana also means bad intentions.
Right. Yeah. So sometimes you can't help but think, oh wait, is this a fairy tale? It's just been... why would someone name their children this? So how can we remove this doubt this is a story or...
So like this, yes, a good question. Thank you so much. It's sometimes, you know, not just this, but there are many, many pastimes in Shastra that we come across where things seem too convenient, right? So how this all happen? But, you know, it is said that in Shastra, these things are there and one should just take it as face value with Vishwada, that these things did happen. And in those days, when names were given, it was nowadays okay. People follow Rashi. Now there's not even that. Rashi also not followed mostly nowadays. No, people don't follow. But not much science goes into it. But previously, when names are given, when you think about the names for Lord Balaram, Lord Krishna, you see the whole ceremony where the names are given and it was explained how the character will be. So these saints or these sadhus who used to then give the names would know the future of this person, and this is how the names will be given. So we have to understand it in that sort of context. I hope it makes sense. Yeah. Anybody else? Oh, thank you so much. Krantaraj Srivagvatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
His Grace Mukunda Hari Prabhu ki.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai.